Streaming live 24/7. RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he sports the top. Whoa. And here comes a Mitchell. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go!
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Floyd Mayweather is 50-0 following his TKO victory over Conor McGregor, and we are going to recap that fight and Friday's Bellator 182 on this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast on Radio Influence. Of course, we are brought to you by Fight TV. Fight is your gateway to everything fighting, MMA, wrestling, boxing, and more, live on your phone or TV. The Fight app is your wrestling, MMA, and boxing TV. Watch live pay-per-views and free programming on your own schedule. Download Fight for your day by going to fite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is Fight, fite.tv/radioinfluence/. And of course, Fight will have the Canelo GGG fight for $79.99. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It's going good, Jason. I'm very much in a good mood because I tell you what, a lot of times that we have the big circus in town and it's a big time fight, it usually doesn't deliver. And I'm not saying the fight we saw last night was absolutely fantastic, but I thought it was one that if you did sit down and purchase this pay-per-view, it was a really enjoyable experience, almost cathartic. And it's not something I anticipated. If you listen to the pre-fight show, what McGregor did last night was fairly impressive despite losing nearly every round. So I'm in a good mood. I feel good because I liked what we saw last night. I thought it was a real fun night of combat sports.
I think in terms of describing Conor's performance, there's two things that stick out to me. A, he did not embarrass himself, and he earned a lot of respect for people in the boxing world.
Yeah, the ones that were willing to give it to him. Because you did get the sense with some of the boxing analysis you would get throughout the fight week, during the fight, and even post-fight, that some people had already made their mind up. And this was more of a pride thing. And they really weren't going to give it to Conor, even if he came out and knocked out Floyd. They would have come up with some sorry excuse. But those that were kind of flexible with their perspective and their point of view, I think absolutely Conor surprised just about anyone, which is because, again, the simple fact of this fight is you had the best boxer this century in Floyd Mayweather go up against a guy who had never competed in a professional boxing match. And Conor didn't embarrass himself, and the referee definitely did him a big favor stopping that fight when he did. Because, again, that shot of Conor getting knocked out probably would have damaged him a little bit. Mm-hmm. But to be completely honest with you, the way he performed, it was a win-win for both guys.
I thought it was a good stoppage. I saw some people kind of questioning. Obviously, Conor had his statement where basically Conor, you know, basically wanted to be knocked out for this fight to end. But, you know, if you go back to the preview show, that's kind of the way I saw this fight ending, was that the referee was going to come in and save Conor McGregor. So for me, I had no issues with the stoppage.
Yeah, it's not like when Conor was completely not gassed and not rocked that he ever put Floyd in danger. So what would make one think that a rocked, tired McGregor would in rounds 11 and 12 rebound and get the finish? It's highly improbable. It just seemed like he didn't have much power in his punches. So I thought the stoppage was great as well. I don't think it eliminated some crazy Rocky Balboa story. And I think it's one where Conor should absolutely say that the fight stoppage was bad, because Chael Sonnen talked about this in the ESPN broadcast, but it's basically like as soon as that bell is over, it's time to promote the next fight. And for McGregor, it's all about looking tough and regaining your credibility and opening that shadow of the doubt that you could have returned in the later rounds and got some crazy fluke knockout or at least survived until the distance. So, yeah, I thought it was a perfectly fine stoppage because the combination of Conor looking absolutely tired, as well as he wasn't intelligently defending himself, and the only thing that would have happened if the fight went on is you would have had more potential injury to Connor's brain, which would not have been good at all for a guy who's likely going to continue to fight in either boxing or mixed martial arts. He just he was completely out of it. You could just tell with the movement of his feet, the way he was walking listlessly, and it was all said and done what was going to take place there. But it was a great fight, and one in which cardio ended up playing kind of the biggest role, I think, out of anything.
Yeah, I mean, you could see Connor wearing down as that fight went on. You know, you look at the start of this fight, and I think one of the things that heading into this fight, if you would have said that Connor McGregor, in my mind, was up 3-0 to start this fight, I would have said, man, you're kind of crazy. I didn't think it would be odd for him to win the opening round just because I kind of felt the opening round would be a round where Floyd was going to use those 3 minutes just to kind of feel out Conor McGregor. I mean, this is a guy that you don't have any footage on in terms of, you know, any pure boxing matchup, see what he's going to do. You know, but really, I mean, even when you look at the stats for the first 3 rounds, I mean, you're talking that Floyd Mayweather only landed 12 punches in the opening 3 rounds, 2 in the first round, 5 in the second, 5 in the third. In comparison, Connor landed 9 strikes in the first round, 8 in the second, and 9 in the third. But then really, you see that big jump in the fourth round for Floyd Mayweather. And, you saw, to me, I think you saw a different Floyd Mayweather. And I think that it was more of, I think, not exactly having a ton of respect for Conor McGregor, even though he did admit after the fact of, hey, Conor was a lot tougher than he thought he'd be, but he kept coming down, you know, coming at him. But, one of the things that really jumped out to me about watching this fight was how many times did Conor McGregor have to hit Floyd Mayweather in the back of the head before they were actually Robert Byrd was going to take a point?
It seemed inevitable. It really did. And I had real anxiety for Conor because I thought, if this guy's going to win a BS decision, every single point is so valuable, and he's going to give one away for a strike that I'm not sure how much damage it's doing. But it was kind of frustrating, I think, watching it, because it seems as though we saw Conor get warned about that strike like 6 times. And it's one where it seemed on the fringes of this fight, Conor was looking to kind of take as many shortcuts as he could with using his body and his size and his clinch and little MMA tactics to score points, or at least put some damage on Floyd. But to answer your question, I don't think we would have seen a point taken away until Floyd showed real visible injury or pain to one of those strikes. It seemed like for the most part, Floyd was brushing it off, and we weren't going to see a point taken away, which is a bit surprising, because you would imagine that I would have assumed that the boxing officials would have been real protective of Floyd in this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, you did definitely, as you mentioned, you saw kind of the MMA tactics that Conor McGregor, did have in this fight. And I think also kind of the crazy aspect of this, the fact that this fight only went 10 rounds. If you go back to the Manny Pacquiao fight, Manny Pacquiao only landed 81 punches in 12 rounds. If you go back to the Canelo Alvarez fight, Canelo landed 111 strikes in 12 rounds. So I think that says a lot about Conor McGregor. I mean, I think, you know, heading into this matchup, people were kind of saying, oh, this is a farce, it's not going to be competitive. And I do feel that there are some people in the media out there that just, you know, basically had the, oh, Conor's not going to be able to do anything. Max Kellerman, McGregor's not going to land a punch, which obviously that he landed multiple punches. You know, I think there are some people in the media that have to eat a little bit of crow when it comes to Conor McGregor. But, you know, I think the biggest thing at the end of the day, he didn't embarrass himself. And Conor has put himself in a really good position, not just in terms of MMA, but also in terms of boxing. You know, noted after the fact, calling himself a free agent, which the thing I have always been told when it comes to Conor McGregor in the UFC, that, you know, especially since he's had the, you know, been in championship fights, that essentially it's one fight deals every time. Obviously, his days of a disclosed payroll of $1 million or $3 million, those days are over. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how that does play out, which kind of leads into, well, what is his next matchup? Is it boxing against Paulie Majinali, or is it an MMA matchup against Nate Diaz? I think no matter what it is, whether it's boxing or MMA, it will not be a single promoter. It will be co-promoted with McGregor Sports.
Yeah, I think he has enough leverage to make that demand, because for Connor, this is a total business decision, and he has the most leverage I think we've ever seen out of anybody as it regards to the UFC. Given their lack of stars, and given his absolute star power, and given the fact that he has a championship belt, I think that's real likely. I don't know who is around him to help him with that from a business standpoint to make that happen, but I think you're going to see Connor, if he's going to learn one thing from Floyd, it's how he's made a lot of his money. And it is, if it's not a McGregor Promotions, the percentage that he would likely get out of pay-per-view buys would be astronomical. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's in the fight game, when it comes to contracts, leverage is key. And for the most part, the UFC has leverage over its fighters. But yeah, I mean, it's like Conor McGregor has so much leverage on the UFC. It's hard to fathom, because it's just simple. When you're the UFC and you look at the fiscal year, if Conor McGregor has fought two times, it's been a good year financially. Mm-hmm. And if he's not fought, it's been a bad year. It's as simple as that. For the UFC, they just need to, from their own selfish perspective, make sure the deal they make puts them in a position to do well profit-wise, or at least get a high revenue. Because Conor needs to take every single penny he can get, because he's certainly worth it. And just going back to the pre-fight analysis, like, yeah, I thought Conor was going to get starched and embarrassed, because I don't think that was an illogical point of view, given, again, like, Conor's not a boxer, Floyd's the best. And I think it speaks to how that wasn't like a crazy idea when Floyd basically beat Conor every round except for round one and two, and then stopped him, and then we're like amazed at how great Conor looked. I mean, to me, that speaks to the reality of where we were at pre-fight, that for Conor, what he did is considered an A-plus or a passing mm-hmm. grade, which I agree it was a passing grade, but I do think it speaks to – this was kind of insane what we saw here, that Conor competed with Floyd at this level, given the entire context of his professional debut was against Floyd Mayweather Jr. His star gained – his star got so much brighter. His stat got so much higher. And with Floyd retired, I think Conor is certainly the biggest star in combat sports. I would probably say he's a bigger star than Canelo. But, I mean, I could be wrong there. I could be absolutely wrong, but I think he is.
It's a moral victory for Conor. I mean, I know you as an athlete, you don't want moral victories, but that's what it is. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I remember after the third round, I am going, oh, my God, is Conor McGregor going to pull this thing off? But then, you know, kind of that question was, where will his gas tank be? And we saw the gas tank did, you know, slow down. And, you know, Floyd, you know, capitalized on that and really went after him. And, you know, all the credit to Floyd Mayweather in what he does. I guess we believe him that he's retiring.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to financially, where is he at? But look, Leonard Ellerby probably take care of him financially in putting his money the right way. But I think he is retired. He didn't look as great as he's looked at times, but I think he's retired, man. What do you think, a Conor rematch is in the works, or a fight against a more dangerous boxer? I think would be a bad idea for Floyd's legacy to go out and in his career with a 50-1 record, a 50-1 record with a bad loss to a high-level boxer. So I think he's retired, man. And I think for every fighter, you want to avoid one thing. This is what Conor avoided. He avoided the Ronda Rousey loss. Mm-hmm. The way Rousey got destroyed by Holm and destroyed by Nunez, that's what you want to avoid if you're a high-level, prestigious fighter, an A++ fighter. In that, if you get a loss like that, that damages your credibility so big when it comes to drawing. When Ronda returns, you'll still be a big pay-per-view draw. But that, you know, just that B-roll, that video of her getting knocked out by Nunez or getting head-kicked by Holly Holm really damaged her mystique. And I think Conor avoided that, and I think Floyd would do well to avoid that. And I think if he continues to fight against the best boxers on the planet, eventually that will take place, because that's just, you know, Father Time's undefeated, Jason.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I found very interesting in the post-fight interviews that we saw here was an interview that was done on FS1 with Leonard Ellaby, the CEO of Mayweather Promotions, where essentially saying that Conor McGregor has a future in boxing, which I could not help but think in the back of my mind, is Leonard Ellaby and Floyd Mayweather going, we want to be in the long-term business of Conor McGregor? And are they going to essentially try to steal Conor McGregor away from the UFC?
Well, if they're fans of money, why not? And they are fans of money. When you're at this big of – when you're – you know, the combat sports at this level is so much not about sports and so much about figuring out how to get money from Americans in your pocket. And that's probably what they're looking at is who's the next draw. I don't think it's Gervonta Davis. He looked all right there, although kind of a bad way for him to go into the fight, missing weight and then ending it kind of like on an illegal strike. But for Ellaby, I mean, his priority is what's next, what's going to help put dope ass meals on my table. I'm sure he can afford meals for the rest of his life, but I mean, I'm talking some filet mignon and some high quality asparagus. And Conor McGregor is probably the answer. I don't think Conor McGregor is going to go about that way because I think for him, you mentioned the McGregor Promotions thing. I think it's valuable to him to cut out as many people as he can when it comes to that financial stream. When the money comes in, you want it to give money to as few mouths as possible. And for Conor McGregor, Jason, what does Ellaby, Mayweather Promotions, bring to Conor?
Yeah, I don't know.
But
I mean, even if you got to think about, you know, Showtime's got to be sitting there going, maybe when we're looking for these stars that are ultimately going to drive subscriptions for your network and potential pay-per-view buys, you have to look at. So, I mean, I think it's I can't imagine that over the next couple of months that Conor McGregor and Dana White are going to be best buddies.
No, man, there's going to be crazy stories. It'll be heated, and then they'll get champagne for each other the day after Conor fights in the UFC again. I mean, we kind of already saw that with the last fight.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the UFC needs Conor McGregor. I mean, they absolutely need it. One of the things, and I forget who I was watching this week, where they were basically saying, you have to start to wonder, is Dana White just over everything? And is he at the point where he's just like, I'm just fed, I'm done? I mean, you look at all the issues going on in the UFC, you know, with the clear lack of star power that's in the UFC. I mean, it's not saying there's not great fights in the UFC, but in terms of those big, you know, casual fan, you know, fights that are going to be people interested, you know, it's just not there. So you do wonder kind of where Dana White's head's at it as he goes forward. You know, he mentioned after the fact, you know, he's ready to get back to the UFC. Can someone just tell Stipe Miocic he's not getting Anthony Joshua? Can someone just tell him that? Because, like, it's like, look, you know, Stipe, yes, you're the UFC heavyweight champion, but if I go to a bar and ask people who's the UFC heavyweight champion, I don't know if they know the answer.
Yeah, and if you're Stipe Miocic at the bar asking somebody that question, they still won't. They still won't know that answer. I mean, come on, bro, you're a Cleveland champion. Don't do that to the Cleveland fan base. That would be scary. Yeah, that fight's not happening because Anthony Joshua is probably going to make a lot of money fighting the best heavyweight boxers in England. Speaking of Dana White, is he tired? I tell you what, I will give Dana White credit for one thing. In any industry, when you obsess yourself over something, it is so easy to get burnt out. Like, you know, if you're a hardcore sushi chef, year three or four into being a sushi chef, you're probably tired of raw fish. Like, you probably want to start doing fried shrimp or gumbo. Dana White's been in a high-pressure situation in the UFC since, like, 2001. Since 16 years, 17 years, this man, love him or hate him, you know, has been in a high pressure situation with this promotion since 2001. So firstly, I would say I hope he doesn't end it on a sour note. Secondly, I would say that's absolutely impressive and inhuman that he's gone through this for this long. It's almost – when you really look at the body of work, Jason, I don't really know what you would compare it to in other sports. I mean, I know you have boxing promoters that have been here since the dawn of time, but for the UFC, for the president of the UFC, this has been a a schedule nonstop every year, every month from 2001 to 2017 into 2018. So it is something where you would assume if Dana has any ability to get burnt out or tired, it would have happened like in 2006. But here we are, and he's still in that position. Hopefully not, because I do think for Dana, if he is focused and makes the right decisions, the best days for the UFC are in the year 2018 with Conor fights.
Yeah, well, you got to hope that, that Conor does return to the UFC. You know, we got one question we got here from Marshall asking for our honest opinion. Do we see Conor fighting in the UFC again or trying to find money fights in boxing? I would simply put, he is going to go where the biggest money is. You know, look, I think in the UFC, it's Nate Diaz, a trilogy matchup against Nate Diaz. And if it's boxing, it has to be Paulie Marginali.
Yeah, I think that makes them. I think that makes a lot of sense. We'll probably see both those fights before it's all said and done. But I think his next fight will be in the UFC, and probably against Diaz. I think the majority of his fights as his career goes on will be in the UFC, because for Conor, you got to look at two things. I mean, you got to look at the long term, and you got to look at the short term in terms of the biggest payday, but the long term, in terms of if you go out and continue to compete in boxing and then get embarrassed, that really does hurt your long-term value. Eventually, with enough losses in a row, you will become some type of afterthought. Although Conor has done such a phenomenal job of either gaining stock coming out of losses, you know, just saying "fuck it," as he says, and which is just epic, like an epic moment. I really thought that was so cool emotionally, if you were somebody watching that. To see that attitude coming out of a loss was like a really nice story that is outside of sports. But I think he needs to take care of his brand and understand what he is one of the best in the world at, and that's mixed martial arts. And if he takes care of that, he could continue to pile on money and money and money fighting in the UFC. He's going to have to hold himself strong, but I think his next fight is in the UFC. I think he will continue to fight because it seems like he has a real itch and necessity to compete because he loves this. He also loves money, and I think this is going to be a nice balance where you see him fight next in the UFC and fight often in the UFC multiple times a year, two times a year for the next couple of years.
You know, the thing, I always love Conor McGregor's post-fight interviews. I just think they're so fascinating. You know, he just kind of, he speaks from the heart. And I was watching his interview with Megan O'Leary where, you know, she asked what's next. I mean, you know, clearly he's saying, hey, you come back to UFC, you're going to do boxing. And, you know, he kind of sat back and he said, what I'm thinking what's next is sitting down, breaking down this fight of what I did wrong. You know, and he noted in the interview things that he struggled with. He said, you know, it wasn't the at-range stuff. It was, you know, when they got in that clinch and the things that Foy was able to do to him. You know, that to me what always finds me very interesting about Conor McGregor, and we'll see what happens there. You know, in terms of some other storylines and in terms of this fight, obviously the pay-per-view issues. One of the things that really jumped out to me about this as I was working a game, and, you know, during the game, I have my tweet deck open, so I see all these tweets coming in. And it really says something to me about where we are as a society, as cord cutters, with the issues of UFC.tv, when I just saw a lot of MMA reporters who had bought this pay-per-view via UFC.tv. It wasn't like it was a cheaper price than, you know, whether you were buying on your cable provider or your satellite provider. So I thought it said a lot about kind of where we are as society as cord cutters. And the other thing is, hey, Oscar De La Hoya, you mad at me, bro? Like, are you just pissed that you couldn't get in the Conor McGregor business? I don't know if you saw that tweet he had on, what was it, Friday night or Saturday morning? It's just like, you know, I mean, look, Canelo GG is a great fight, but let's be honest about it. It's not going to get this kind of attention.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what Oscar's point was with this tweet. Like, with this tweet was, did he just assume the entire world is going to be like, you know what, Oscar, you're right. I'm going to stop watching this fight. I'm going to watch Canelo and GGG. Like Oscar De La Hoya has a big fight scheduled. Don't – like, what's the positive for just constantly talking smack about that? All it does is make you look stupid and not big league when, in fact, you are promoting the best boxing match of the year. Not the biggest one, but the best one. Kind of weird with the pay-per-view thing. Like, how did people not know this was going to be a seismic event? I don't know. I would assume this is something where me sitting here in my house, I don't know anything about the technology. So maybe it's just unrealistic to expect anyone to prepare themselves for so many people ordering a pay-per-view online or via TV provider. I'm so interested, though, because I'm sure at the end of the day, whether or not someone saw the fight, they certainly – the check cleared and it counts as a buy. I'm very interested to see what this buy rate is, man. When I went outside my house, neighbors packed with cars at houses, and as I was driving to drop off a couple people, traffic was picking up in an area that doesn't really see traffic at 11 o'clock on a Friday night. That's because everyone was going home, because everyone was watching the fights, man. Social media was suffocating. And, I feel like it's going to be less than 5 million buys, but I honestly have no freaking idea. Like, there's no way I can give you a good prognosis. Like, when it gets so high, Jason, anyone who tells you they know anything about what it could be is probably just BSing you. You just have to wait to see what the number is when it comes in, because it's this isn't a common thing, pay-per-views to do more than 2 million.
Yeah, I know Floyd, after the fact, said that he reported, hey, it's going to break the pay-per-view record. I wouldn't surprise if it's more, if it's over 5 million. You know, if it's like 5.1, 5.2. I mean, it really wouldn't surprise me. And, you know, this was the first time that Mayweather Promotions had done a pay-per-view where, you know, people can access it digitally, you know. And I think that this is something we're going to see. You know, I mentioned right at the beginning of the show, Fight TV is going to have, you know, the digital rights to Canelo versus GGG. So if you don't have cable or satellite, you're a cord cutter, that you have the ability to go out and purchase this pay-per-view, you know. And look, and also, I mean, even if, you know, let's just say the buy rate's 5 million, there might have been a million plus people watching this pay-per-view via illegal streams. You can't deny that.
Yeah, people watch this. More people watch this than maybe any combat sports we've seen live. But, you know, prior to, like, when everyone was able to watch things on TV. I'm not really sure how things were done back in your day, Jason.
Acting like I'm 80 years old.
You know, with the Jack Johnson fights and whatnot. But when it comes to the modern way we do stuff with the pay-per-view buy rate for the big fight, this probably was the most watched fight in the past, you know, 15 years, I think. If you don't... And maybe if it wasn't watched, at least people knew what happened because they were monitoring their social media. It's again, like I kind of hit on this every time we have a big fight about how society is all about big events. But this was a big event where I think literally everyone below a certain age, or most people below a certain age with the internet, felt the need to be a part of the conversation or aware of what took place here. If you just looked at your social media during a specific time period, regardless if you follow, you know, Luke Thomas and Brett Okamoto, or if you follow Reba and Ellen DeGeneres, your social media feed is probably still absolutely stuffed with content. And I mean, look, it's something where, you know, it's a big deal, Jason, when you see Steve Harvey trending and all he was doing was sitting in the crowd and he was trending on Twitter in front of LeBron James, by the way, in front of LeBron James. But yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, okay, if you had to guess, more or less than 5 million buys, what do you think?
More.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's 5.1, 5.2, you know, somewhere the low 5 million range, but I think it's going to cross that 5 million. And that's just, I mean, you're talking about, you know, let's just say the total buys, let's just say it's 5.1 million. So if you do, you know, have my calculator here, 5.1 million times that by $99.99, that's $509 million just in pay-per-view revenue.
And then what percentage do you think is going to Mayweather-McGregor?
If you look at the score's payouts, it looks like it's a 70-30 split.
Okay. So what's 30% of $509 million?
A lot of goddamn money.
Yeah, a lot of goddamn money. I mean, so McGregor was taken in, I think, what it was, 30 to 100 was the initial, was the way it was playing out there.
Yeah, in terms of the guaranteed revenue, yeah.
Yeah, man. So basically, McGregor may be taking home. I don't even know, but certainly.
By the way, 30% of $549 million is almost $153 million.
Okay, so if you add that, you're talking about like 180, which is still roughly like 1/6 of what that Powerball winner got. So she's the one that's the real winner. That Powerball winner that won like 600, 700 million.
Well, look, but, let's just say this. Both guys are cutting a big check to the federal government.
No, Floyd probably isn't. But yeah, that's crazy, man. I think
it makes you wonder as and I'm not, you know, up, you know about international, you know, in terms of guys who come here and make a ton of money. I wonder what that means, how much Connor has to pay since he's not a U.S. citizen.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, you got it. I mean, it's a nice problem to have, but God, I feel like you just have to.
You want to be the accountant for Conor McGregor, man. You do his Irish taxes. You do his U.S. taxes.
Yeah, I feel like you got to employ multiple people. Like, that's a crazy. I get stressed out about my taxes. I don't even know how it works. Like, I'm real scared that one day somebody's gonna knock on my door and just be like, "You got to go to jail. You didn't pay your taxes correctly." But I haven't made money my life, but yeah, it's concerning. And if you're like a high value citizen or whatever, surely the focus is on you. You know, the IRS is very aware of the financial situation of wealthy athletes and other wealthy people in this country. So, yeah, I wonder where Connor is in terms of the richest people in Ireland, like where he is on this list. Maybe he's probably not even on the top 100 because wealth is like at a high level for the top people in society. But I wonder where Connor ranks among like Irish athletes in Irish pop culture. You know, Wright Thompson, that article made it seem like he was almost looked at negatively among the higher class press. And then people came back and said that was untrue. But I would be interested, you know, 10 years from now to look at what the impact of Connor was on Ireland, if we're overestimating it or if we're underestimating it.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, look, it's going to be interesting to see what does happen with Conor McGregor. But on Friday night, it was Bellator 182, took place at the Turning Stone Casino and Resort in Verona, New York, and was headlined by former welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov, defeating Chidi Njikwani by TKO in the first round in a catchweight bout of 175 pounds. It was a catchweight due to Chidi Njikwani not making weight, which was interesting on the broadcast. It's almost like they went out of their way not to mention that Chidi Njikwani missed weight. Dwayne Barth asking me, was this a bizarre oversight or much more? I don't know what it is, but it was just odd to me when you have a fighter miss weight by 4 pounds that we don't even talk about, you know, the fact that he missed weight and third straight matchup for Chidi Njikwani, that's catchweight bout. But Andrei Koreshkov looked absolutely amazing. We all know they're going to do Douglas Lima versus Rory McDonald. But, I mean, Koreshkov, man, you know, one of his best performances inside the Bellator cage.
Absolutely. For Bellator, it's not like we have praised them for going out of their way to talk about fighters that miss weight during broadcasts. So I wonder what the change was. I feel like that's something that was premeditated and not something by accident. That's just something I would assume, given we're talking about the main event fight. Great performance out of Koreshkov. Essentially, to me, the story was for Andre, whatever he wanted to do, he did. And on the feet, he looked solid. Chidi had some nice kicks, but Koreshkov's ability to just put Njikwani in a rough position and then eventually finish him with strikes. I mean, this was papitas for Koreshkov. There really wasn't a whole lot of struggle to get this first-round victory. Chidi is certainly a very tough opponent. But Koreshkov, to me, the way I would describe it would be efficient and simple for the way he got this win. And a great performance out of him. And it sets up nicely for whatever takes place at welterweight. You could make either of those two fights. And I would look forward to it. I don't know. You know, I think he has obviously a better shot against Douglas Lima than Rory McDonald in a rematch with Lima. But I think Koreshkov just continues to improve time and again. And he isn't obviously a star for Bellator, but the talent level is astronomical. And if you're just doing a top 10 most talented fighters in Bellator, I think Andre kind of finds himself towards the bottom of that list, which is impressive for a non-champion.
Yeah, it was just an unbelievable performance. And I thought John McCarthy gave Chi Ngakoue every opportunity to stay in that fight. I think you could have made the case for him to stop the fight sooner than he did. But a big win there by Andrei Kreshkov. In the co-main event, Fernando Gonzalez with a come-from-behind submission victory in the third round against Brendan Ward, a guillotine choke. I thought Brendan was up 2-0. Heading into the third round, and then goes for a takedown, and give kudos to Fernando Gonzalez, locks in the guillotine, and Brendan Ward now 1-3 in his last four fights.
Yeah, not a good look for Brendan, especially because I thought this was surprising out of him. I know he has this in his toolbox, but it seems like he really loves to throw them bungalows. He loves to go in wars. And it almost seemed like at times in this fight, he got back up just to throw again. It was a real inconsistent approach at times. That may have led to a mental lapse to allow himself to get choked out. Great win for Gonzalez in that he got his hand raised, but a fight where he was getting steadily beaten down and controlled, specifically controlled, not necessarily beaten down. And maybe Brendan Ward just showcased a bit more focus and a bit more consistency. What I'm going to do in this fight is out wrestle and out grapple Gonzalez, and I'm not going to be worried about the entertaining aspect of this bout. He could have seen himself win a decision. So I think Brendan will get another fight because he acquitted himself real well against a talented fighter in Fernando up until the finish. But a comfort behind win for Gonzalez. This is not how I anticipated this bout playing out at all. And, I thought Gonzalez, kudos to him, but not something where you watch this fight and think he's going to be a world beater in whatever division he fights in next, which that's another question for Gonzalez, given his ability to make weight and not make weight, and then given the fact that I believe Fernando Gonzalez is 5'9", weighing in at 180 pounds, right?
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, that's definitely going to be a big question for him heading forward. Also, the main card, Bruin Ellie gets a split decision win over Vita Ortega. Very close fight, could have definitely gone either way. Also, AJ McKee gets a decision win over Blair Tugman. I thought Blair Tugman had some opportunities that he just failed on, just didn't take advantage of those opportunities. But AJ McKee, another win for him. Did you see the tweet from Ben Askren?
What did he say?
So they put up this this graphic on, starting your how many wins you start your Bellator career with. Ben Askren has a record of 10, and it has AJ McKee, of course, who is now at 9. And they put this infographic up, and Ben Askren had just this. I'm trying to pull up the tweet here on my own just to give you exactly what Ben Askren did say here as I scroll through my Twitter timeline. I know this is great podcasting audio, but I'll find it here. And it was one of these tweets that it was just absolutely hilarious to me, where he's basically talking about not padding your record, and what it was a tweet from Bloody Elbow, which said McKee's 9th win in a row to start his belt career ties record with Ben Askren. Ben Askren replies, "But I won the belt in my 4th fight. # not padding my record."
Yeah, that sucks, man. That's a stupid stat. That is so stupid. Here's another way of looking at it, Jason. I'm going to just play a game with you. In that 9-fight win streak, how many people do you think had a Wikipedia article today that Ben Askren fought?
2.
No cheating. Huh?
2.
Ben Askren.
Yeah, 2.
No, 9 of them. All 9 fighters have Wikipedia articles.
Oh, okay.
How many Wikipedia articles? And just to remind you guys who we beat: Koreshkov, Carl Amasu, Lima, Huron, Nick Thompson, Lyman Good, Hornbuckle, and Ryan Thomas twice. How many guys that AJ McKee fought do you think have a Wikipedia article?
Oof. 1.
1. Blair Tugman. And the
Blair
article.
Blair Tugman has a Wikipedia page?
He does. It has 3 words on it. It has 3 sentences. It's
holy
ready?
Cow.
I'm gonna read you the entire page. Blair Tugman is an American mixed martial artist competing in the featherweight division in Bellator. A professional competitor since 2007, he has also competed for CES MMA. And then Tugman faced AJ McKee on August 25th. He lost via unanimous decision. I just read you the entire contents of all of AJ McKee's opponent's Wikipedia articles.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, when you know, I would have thought after the win over Masada that he would have gotten someone, you know, higher up in the rankings. No disrespect to Blair Tugman, but it's just, you know, when we talk about the people who come down Bellator matchmaking, this is one of those matches they'll point to and say, you know, at some point we gotta find out how good AJ McKee is, or otherwise his contract's just gonna run out. Now, you know, he becomes a free agent, and now, you know, maybe, you know, the UFC makes him a big offer or not, but it'll be interesting to see what happens there. In terms of the preliminary card, Joey Davis looked good. TKO victory there. Just some brutal elbows on the ground against Justin Roswell. Arlene Palenko, split decision win over Kavanaugh. Honeycutt, TKO win over Kevin Casey. Kate Jackson gets a TKO win due to injury over Colleen Schneider at the end of the opening round. Georgia Carr-Hyan gets a doctor stoppage win in the second round against Daniel Pineda. Henry Corrales, decision win against Noah Lahat. Vadim Nemkov gets a win over Philippe Lenz. Very impressive performance by him. Tatalia Nogueira, she got a submission win over Amanda Bell. Ricky Rainey, decision win over Mark Stevens. Christy Lopez and Jessica Sotok fought to a split draw. You know, so those are some of the Matt Secor, who's you know, people may be aware of him. He got a Americana submission win over T.J. Sumler. In terms of, you know, the sticking points to me about that preliminary card, Joey Davis, how good he looked in his matchup, you know, and Henry Corrales. This is a guy that you know, he has moved his training to the MMA lab. His coach had ended up getting a job at the MMA lab, so he moved over there, and now. His last two fights, full training camps, 2-0. You know, his first three fights in Bellator are all short notice fights against, you know, two former champions and Emmanuel Sanchez. So, really interested to see where Henry Corrales does go from here. And but overall, a nice little Bellator card that I would tell you on Friday night. I was watching this fight card live. Not a lot of tweeting going on about this fight card.
Yeah, not necessarily trending on Twitter. But it's one of those, you know, investment cards where you're just banking in the investment, but not something that I would expect a high degree of ad sales for. I thought the prelims were good in that Bellator showed every prelim I wanted to watch, which as I applaud them for. Sometimes I get concerned, like sometimes a couple things get pushed back, but basically everything I wanted was there. Joey Davis, nice finish to me. That was the guy you circle and bookmark and be like, I'm looking forward to see what he has. But up and down the card, you had guys on the prelims with interesting names winning. But yes, Jason, nobody was trending. No, there was no Bruna Ellen trending on Twitter. No AJ McKee hashtag. And a bit unfortunate. But, I mean, for Bellator, when you're looking on the horizon, Jason, when's the next time you think they're going to put on a card that kind of has the interest of the casual mixed martial arts fan?
It could be their next fight card on September 23rd, Saturday night. You've got Benson Henderson headlining that card against Patricky Pipple. Also, you have the Bellator debut of Roy Nelson. Lawrence Larkin, Paul Daly's on that fight card. Gochi Yamauchi against Adam Piculotti, which is a great matchup there at lightweight. Plus, you've got the return of Aaron Pico. You know, that may be. It's a nice little fight card, but of course, it's on a Saturday night during college football season. That can be a tough sell.
Yeah. What pisses me off is you just mentioned that card. You didn't mention Javi Ayala.
You are the president of the Javi Ayala fan club. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A side fight for him. Showcase bout for Ayala against Roy Nelson. And yeah, I'm looking. Actually, that is a tentpole event to have Ayala and not put him in the main event. Craziness. Yeah.
All joking aside with Javi Ayala, he's in a situation if all of a sudden he goes out and let's just say he knocks out Roy Nelson. If I'm managing Javi Ayala, I'm going, Javi, we're fighting out your contract, and we're going to see what we can get out of the UFC.
Damn right, bro. I mean, we're going to say, yeah, he's in a nice position where with the win here, he is absolutely – he's just winning and winning and winning. And, you could co-promote a UFC card with Ayala Promotions. That could be in the future for Javi. But, I mean, look, that's a great – it's a good card. Looking forward to it. And – hopefully the Glory stuff is good too. I know that they're kind of co-promoting that with Glory, and hopefully for the love of God, they find Aaron Pico, an opponent who hasn't like competed in an RFA main event or whatever, you know, give him a little bit of an easier opponent, allow him to gain some confidence. But I will say that, that turnaround is a little quicker than I would have expected for Pico.
Yeah, it is definitely a quick turnaround. I know they signed the guy out of the Black Zillion camp that was talking about how he wanted to fight Aaron Pico, but as far as I know, they have not announced Aaron Pico's opponent for that matchup, so we'll see who they go there with him. Also, in terms of MMA coming up on Tuesday, you have the next episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. I guess you would say this is the season one finale of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. We'll mention a couple of fighters going to be on this fight card that you can check out my interviews with them on theamireport.com. Bavon Lewis, who's going to be in the co-main event, as he takes on Elias Urbina. Also, Casey Kinney gets a second opportunity, stepping up on short notice to be a part of this fight card. Also, Dontell Mays, who is considered top heavyweight prospect out there, did an interview with him, so you can check that out on themmareport.com. So that is coming up on Tuesday. Then on Saturday, we have UFC Fight Night 115 from Rotterdam, afternoon fight card. Main card on UFC Fight Pass begins at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 p.m. Pacific Time, headlined by Alexander Volkov against Stefan Struve. We'll see what the co-main event of this fight card ends up being, because Jermaine De Armandame is out of this event due to a hand injury, so we'll see if they do find a new opponent for Marin Renault. By the way, the prelims start at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, 8:30 a.m. Pacific Time, so that's coming up later on this week on UFC Fight Pass. And Daniel, got to just end the podcast by saying, everything good is it in Southeast Texas for you? You know, I know the hurricane came through. I know various parts of the state got hit really hard, but everything's good for you?
Yeah, no, it literally missed me. Like, it went north, and now it's absolutely concerning and scary for so much of Texas, like from – you know, a little northern in the Corpus Christi area up until at this point Houston. It is pretty scary. And I mean, there's like a hardcore, I mean, there's a significant mixed martial arts scene in those areas, especially Houston. So hopefully everyone stays safe. But man, I tell you what, some of these pictures I see on the internet are so scary with the flooding, with the roadways and whatnot. So if you're listening to this and you're in the area, you know, stay safe. It's absolutely scary. And the scariest part about this hurricane is obviously the rate at which it is moving. It is moving so slowly, which is causing crazy, crazy scenarios with the flooding. I mean, the biggest concern for me is when it comes to digesting what's taking place is the balance between what's actually happening and the way the media will go about romanticizing the disaster aspect of it and making it seem worse than it is. But just seeing the definitive evidence of what's taking place, it's absolutely sad. And I hope to God as many people are safe. And hopefully the storm moves faster than it should. But fortunately, I was lucky enough to not even get a single drop of rain because the day we record the podcast, the trajectory shifted pretty dramatically and moved up higher in the state. But yeah, man, just a rough situation, man. I mean, flooding to me is the absolute thing that this hurricane is threatening. And yeah, hopefully everyone's staying safe.
Yeah, I mean, I live in Florida, so hurricane season is something I've had to deal with all of my life. Of course, you there in Southeast Texas, it's something you have to always deal with as well. You know, it's a part of life. You know, it's something I've dealt with all my life in terms of, you know. You know, it's kind of joking, you know, when, you know, people don't live where I live and, you know, they live up north and they're like, oh, category one, you know, hurricane came through, you know, aren't you leaving your town? I go, no, man, that's like a good rainstorm here. Okay.
Yeah, it's true, man.
But yeah, I did see something where I guess it's just moving so slow. And they were talking about the rain that was being dumped, I think on Austin, Texas, like they're getting, it was like the rain total for this one was like their entire year or something. It's just crazy stuff that I heard. But yeah, hopefully, you know, exactly what you said. Hopefully, you know, everyone in the Houston area, Corpus Christi, Austin, hopefully everything is well. Hopefully we can maybe offer you a little bit of entertainment here on the post-fight podcast to get you through some of that stuff going on. I mean, I was watching something on Saturday where this guy, he owned a jewelry store, and his jewelry store was completely gone. And those are the sad stories that are out there. But hopefully we offered you a little bit of entertainment. By the way, coming up on Wednesday's episode of the MMA Report podcast, going to be joined by multiple fighters. We're going to be talking to a Canadian fighter, Marc Antonio, who actually is fighting for the first time in his home country of Canada in 25 fights. Kind of crazy. So I'll talk to him. Also, Adam Asenza, Christian Aguilar, Steve Ramirez, all going to be on this week's podcast. We'll talk about some other things going on in MMA as well. Of course, if you're not following or not subscribed to this podcast, please do that. Really appreciate that. Rate and review this podcast as well. That really helps us out. Do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. So let's go wrap it up for this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast, which you always hear on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
People that want to see Colin play in the league again because they're a fan of what he did and his social activity, well, that's different. We're talking football. Football people are concerned about putting the best football team together. And while you look and you may say, well, he's better than this backup guy who I never heard of, you never heard of him. But remember that as a backup quarterback in the league, Colin is in a very big disadvantage because teams are not in a position. It's tough enough to build and develop one offense in the NFL. You're not going to be able to develop two. So you're going to have to change your offense for a backup quarterback, and you can't do that. That makes no sense, and it's completely misunderstood by the fans and the media who really don't know football. You can't just have an offense that you run in certain blocking schemes and route concepts, and then your quarterback injured, your backup quarterback is Colin Kaepernick, and he's got to run and freelance and do something different. You don't have time to develop two. So you have to have a quarterback who can run the same offense as your starter. So that eliminates most teams in the league from a football standpoint for Colin Kaepernick. I think that Seattle's offense, I think Carolina's offense were two offenses where I think he would have been a really good fit as a backup quarterback. It's pretty clear to me that the reason they don't want him has to do with off the field, distractions. Do they want to deal with a quarterback that you're going to have a lot of media distractions about what he's going to do, what he did do, what he's going to do in the future? And people don't want that type of distraction for a backup quarterback. It's the same reason why people didn't want to fool with Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow's case, Tim Tebow's not as good a quarterback as Colin Kaepernick. But he still fit the distraction mode that now Colin Kaepernick occupies. So it's not a good fit for the locker room in most cases. Now, let's get to the issue of the political and social element that certain owners are turned off by. And some owners that, quite frankly, there's some that don't care, that just want to win. But they are getting affected, and quite frankly are getting more affected than I ever thought by hearing it from their sponsors that say, we don't want this guy. As a fan, as a sponsor, we don't want this guy representing our city and our team. And I think it's having an effect. I think it's having an effect. Certainly had an effect in Baltimore, who I think would have been willing with John Harbaugh, the brother of Jim, to bring in Colin Kaepernick as a football staff. Ozzie Newsome, John Harbaugh would have been willing to bring him in absence of Joe Flacco. And the owner, I can tell you, Steve Bisciotti, was on board with bringing him in until he started to hear from some of his sponsors. And then from an owner standpoint, he's got to decide, we're going to bring this guy in as a backup until Joe Flacco gets back, and we're going to upset the apple cart of our fan base and, more importantly, our sponsors that are putting a lot of money, and we're going to alienate them for a short term and for a guy that not everybody's convinced is all that as a football player. That's where the problem is. So for people who say, and you hear them say, it's all political and is nothing about football, those people don't know what they're talking about. Okay, because there is a football element to this that doesn't fit for a lot of teams, as I've explained. The people that say it has nothing to do with the political stuff and it's all football, that's not correct either. Because as I've said, I think there are a couple of places where he would have been a good fit. But politically or socially or from a management standpoint, sponsorship, not a good fit. So keep that in mind. It's never as simple. It's not usually as black and white as people think. It's a lot of gray area. But I hope that gives an idea.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.